Hello, I'm Lindy Ann Edwards-Alain of the United Nations Information Center for the Caribbean Area, and this is Build Back Better Caribbean. In this episode, we are excited to hand over to our colleague from World Food Programme Caribbean, also known as WFP Caribbean, Daphne Ewing Chow. Daphne recently spoke with WFP representative and country director Regis Chapman about why this award-winning UN agency decided to establish a multi-country Caribbean office and the impact that WFP Caribbean has been able to make since then.
Winner of the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize, World Food Programme has been operating globally for more than 60 years. While WFP's involvement in the Caribbean began more than half a century ago, the first multi-country office was established in Barbados in 2018 under the leadership of Mr. Regis Chapman. Regis currently serves as representative and country director of WFP's Caribbean multi-country office, covering 22 countries and territories in the English and the Dutch-speaking Caribbean. I recently had the opportunity to talk to Regis about how WFP has grown over the past half a decade, assisting governments and regional institutions in strengthening their emergency preparedness and resilience capacity in the face of shocks, from Hurricane Maria, which devastated the Caribbean in 2017, to COVID-19, to the eruption of La Soufriere volcano in St. Vincent and the Grenadines in 2021.
So in 2017, two major Category 5 hurricanes hit the English-speaking Caribbean, Hurricanes Irma and Maria, and they went on to hit other countries as well. At the time of those hurricanes, I was working in our regional office for Latin America and the Caribbean based in Panama. And when we saw these hurricanes develop, our immediate concern was Haiti, was Dominican Republic, and in particular Haiti, given its vulnerability. So we pre-deployed staff there. We were all ready to respond in Haiti. At the end of the day, Hurricane Irma, the first of the two, shifted north of Hispaniola and left very limited damage in Haiti. But as we sort of looked at the impact that it had in a number of other countries, you know, it dawned on us that we hadn't really been paying enough attention to countries where we did not have a long-standing presence. And the English-speaking Caribbean was a set of countries and territories where we didn't have a presence pre-2017. Years past, we had had some presence in Barbados. Some of the first countries that the World Food Program ever worked in were in the English-speaking Caribbean, Jamaica, Guyana, etc. But it had been many years that we hadn't really engaged in the Caribbean.
Following his involvement in a number of emergency response situations, including in Dominica after Hurricane Maria in 2017, it became evident that WFP had a role to play in supporting the climate-vulnerable countries of the Caribbean region.
Now, I would say that our response in 2017 was really effective. I mean, we stepped in, we filled huge gaps on the logistics side. We filled huge gaps on the direct assistance to impacted populations. We helped establish emergency telecommunications in Dominica that allowed humanitarian responders, but also the government and even impacted populations to communicate, which is critical during an emergency. But the challenge at the time was we didn't really know the countries. We didn't really know the actors. We didn't really know the partners. We had had some engagement with SEDIMA and others before that, but it was relatively limited. And so after that initial response, we began to do our internal lessons learned. And there were also external lessons learned happening. And I think all of these really pointed to the fact that the capacities of WFP in the context of emergencies was just missing from the English-speaking Caribbean. We felt that internally, but externally, a number of partners also expressed the same. So we opened an office here in Barbados to cover the English and Dutch-speaking Caribbean in mid-2018, just as we were winding down our last activities in Dominica in response to Hurricane Maria. And we've just grown since then. We've grown because the type of support that we provide is something that has been missing, and governments and development partners have seen that added value. And so we've grown because there's been a greater demand for the support of WFP by countries and territories.
Since 2018, WFP Caribbean has played a vital role in supporting governments in the region with food security, resilience building, capacity strengthening, and emergency response.
WFP works with regional entities and national governments to help strengthen systems. We have a particular emphasis on working to strengthen social protection systems, disaster management systems, and food systems. Now, our emphasis on strengthening those systems to be more resilient to shocks, and in particular to the climate crisis. At the same time, we recognize that while we're doing that, the Caribbean region is extremely vulnerable to these shocks. So when they occur, we're also, I think, an important partner to these same regional entities and national governments in their response. Whether I want to give sort of three examples of the 5 years that we've been here. In 2019, Hurricane Dorian decimated parts of the Bahamas. At the time, the Bahamas government didn't know who we were. We were still relatively new in our office, but SEDIMA was beginning to understand who we were. So it was actually SEDIMA that picked up the phone, talked to the government, and said, "You're going to want WFP on this one." And so that allowed us to kind of pre-deploy, to initiate some of the internal machinery to be able to build an effective response. Then we fast forward to 2020 and the COVID-19 response. It was, you know, it was a crisis throughout the region, a socioeconomic crisis, but it wasn't the same as a sudden onset emergency like a hurricane. But nonetheless, we worked very closely with SEDIMA to help with CARICOM's commitment to consolidate some of the PPE requirements across countries and territories and deliver them to impacted states. And we began to grow and learn a little bit more with SEDIMA. And then I fast forward to 2021 and the volcanic eruption in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And to me, it was a perfect example of a government-led response with support from the regional entities like SEDIMA and all of their mechanisms, and international entities like WFP integrating within those systems. And I'm really proud of the work that we did in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, because it wasn't about, you know, WFP coming and setting up a parallel system. It was truly that embodiment of WFP taking its capabilities and embedding them in the national and regional structures in an effective way. So you know, I think that's a good example of how, you know, sort of three milestones within these 5 years shows some of that progression.
Regis sometimes refers to WFP in the Caribbean as WFP 2.0. The region is different from some of the other contexts in which WFP operates. It isn't burdened by conflict, and you don't necessarily see poverty or hunger on the level of some other countries and regions. He is sometimes asked the question, why WFP in the Caribbean?
You know, the why WFP is evidenced by the interest that governments have had in the type of work that we do here. The why WFP, I think, is also, you know, it's critical in light of the climate crisis. You look at the vulnerability of small island developing states in the Caribbean, and it's immense. It really is. And I think, you know, what people fail to understand, you know, we often look at the big macro picture, right? So we look at countries that have tens or hundreds of millions of people, and those are the priorities for the humanitarian sector. Or we look at, the level of damage and destruction from an economic loss perspective, from the dollar value, right? But we don't look at is the proportion. And I think this is where small island developing states are really important. You know, you look at Dominica, imagine a country having had a Category 5 hurricane affect from north to south to east to west, tearing off 85% of roofs in the country. Now apply that to the U.S. or in India or any larger country. It's unfathomable, 85%. And that was from, you know, a prime minister down to the most vulnerable, poorest household. You also look at St. Vincent and Grenadines, so okay, a smaller number, 20% of the population displaced, or nearly 20%. Again, imagine 20% of India or the U.S. or even Argentina or Colombia being displaced. It's, you can't fathom that. And so I think that vulnerability isn't about always the day-to-day vulnerability per se, but it's about that proportional impact that events entail for these countries. And the recovery needed is also proportionate in that same degree. So again, a 20% displacement and or a hurricane hits, you know, the coast of the U.S., it's a drop in the bucket of this big country. And the recovery is therefore, at the macro level, not a big issue. Well, it becomes a macro issue when you have such a large percentage of your population impacted in the Caribbean. So that recovery period is significantly longer.
A fundamental characteristic of the Caribbean experience has been vulnerability to such economic, social, and climate shocks. WFP's systems-focused approach has been applied to support the region's governments in building more resilient social protection systems, which offer them more proactive and sustainable strategies when faced with higher categories of emergency.
So we've been working with a handful of governments to link disaster risk financing to ensure predictable cash liquidity for support to impacted populations, right? So rather than relying on when a hurricane hits, the international humanitarian community to come with assistance to provide cash to impacted populations, we've been working with governments to create innovative financial solutions through a macro level insurance scheme called the CRIF, the Caribbean Catastrophic Risk Insurance Facility. And so this has done a couple of things. One, it's brought ministries of finance into the social protection discussion, which is critical given the level of indebtedness and some of the fiscal restraints that many of these countries have. For ministries of finance to see the value of social protection is important. Two, it's reduced the reliance on a WFP having to mobilize resources from our traditional donors to provide cash transfers in a less predictable manner. This allows us to know in advance that if certain thresholds of an event occur, that there will be predictable cash transfers that will go through social protection ministries to the impacted population. And then three, it's also given us a bit of a incentive to strengthen systems before an emergency hits. So the ministries of finance know that X amount of cash would come through based on different scenarios. The social protection ministries know that they would be responsible to deliver the cash. So it creates this incentive to work with WFP and other partners to strengthen those social protection systems to be able to get cash out quickly to people. So whether it's, you know, targeting and analysis, or whether it's the actual delivery mechanisms, or whether it's legislation and policy, you know, all of these things, you know, it creates an environment to really drive some of this change forward.
In the years since it set up its offices in the Caribbean, World Food Programme has built a solid reputation working with national, regional, and international partners to strengthen resilience to the climate crisis and other risks. WFP's systems-focused approach has been evident in its capacity-strengthening efforts. It has been an invaluable resource to regional governments in the aftermath of shocks.
I think what's important is how we partner and how we engage with others. So the systems that we're focused on are social protection systems, disaster management systems, and food systems. And I think that last one is really an area where we need greater emphasis. And I would say food security was really not on the radar of many governments at the political level. It wasn't on the radar of development partners. It really wasn't on outside of ministries of agriculture, many people's radars in the English-speaking Caribbean until COVID-19. And then I think the fragility of those food systems was really exposed. I had governments reaching out to me about establishing urgent grain facilities, strategic grain reserves, and other sort of, you know, big picture sort of items. But if you don't have the grain production, you can't have a grain reserve, right? So the recommendation was really, how do we look with the private sector to make sure that food being imported was of adequate quantities to deal with potential disruptions? That was the immediate phase. But what we've really seen is that the level of dependence on imports is just not sustainable for the Caribbean. And we need to, I think, begin to shift focus. And I say we, I don't just mean WFP. I mean WFP, I mean governments, I mean the CARICOM Secretariat, I mean development partners, I mean everyone with the stake in the game needs to really look at how do we help governments and the region achieve this CARICOM strategy or initiative of 25 by 25, or reducing the food import bill by 25% by the year 2025. And those are important milestones, but it's really about that approach of how do we reduce the reliance on imports and create greater degrees of food sovereignty.
The Caribbean has long grappled with issues of food affordability and rising costs, exacerbated during the recent year due to the impact of COVID-19 and the war in Ukraine. Helping the Caribbean tackle and overcome issues of food security is a pillar of the WFP mandate.
We can increase all the production in the Caribbean of rice, of root crops, etc. But if people don't want to eat what's being produced, then we also have a problem. And I think, you know, like developed countries around the world, you've seen the dietary changes over time in the Caribbean. So this reliance on processed food, on fast food restaurants, on you know, quick, easy, less nutritious consumption patterns. We need to change that. And we need to, as I like to say, we need to return to our roots. We need to get back to our roots. And I say that with all pun intended. You know, we need to get back to our cultural roots. And those cultural roots include, you know, cuisine. Cuisine is an important part of culture. And the cuisine of the past was not fast food chains. It was root crops. And so that's the other side of it. We need to get back to growing more and eating more of those root crops and other traditional crops in the Caribbean. You know, there's a lot of waste of food production in the Caribbean, whether it's, you know, the mango trees that drop, you know, thousands of mangoes and don't get consumed because there's not the post-harvest management and the processing and the conserving, etc. So we need to really take a whole of systems approach when it comes to food systems and look at how do we reap the benefits of all of the agricultural production in the Caribbean, at the same time recognizing that, sure, people are going to want imported food. So it's, again, it's not that we need to eliminate all of those, but I think we need to start with school kids and their parents, changing some of these dietary habits, getting people, again, back to healthier eating, but also ensure that the legislative frameworks, that the logistics and transport, that the production, you know, are all designed around, you know, supporting the Caribbean.
Thanks for listening. I'm Daphne Ewing Chow.
This podcast is produced and presented by the United Nations Information Center for the Caribbean Area, the voice and the face of the United Nations in the Caribbean. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. For more content in this series, find and follow the unique Build Back Better Caribbean podcast on popular streaming platforms.